We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt, that fine gentleman over there, the one, the only, always the incomparable Dan Rubenstein. Week 13, the regular season, all the rivalries officially in the books, at least for another week. We'll talk about week 14 and conference championship week momentarily. But Dan, we made it. How are you, sir?
I'm good. It is strange. You say all the rivalry matchups and games and whatever in the books. I don't recall Oregon and Oregon State playing.
Huh.
I don't.
Huh.
I made up a schedule, an agenda, and I said, boom, I'm going to hit Ohio State, Michigan, and South Carolina, Clemson early. Boom, we got Florida State the night before. Boom, I've got all this stuff to watch, to soak in. And I don't remember the Platypus Cup being played for.
Yeah, maybe somebody watching on verballers.com can chime in on the chat and let us know what happened in that game. I don't see anything here about Notre Dame USC either.
I'm not seeing box scores. I'm not seeing articles, recaps, takes. I see nothing. And that's a little out of the ordinary.
Huh. Huh. Maybe a glitch on the interwebs.
Weird. Weird, weird, weird.
Let us know if you're watching again live on verballers.com, where you can watch all of our shows live. You can also get early access to every episode that we drop. This episode, all of our episodes, driven by our good friends over at Geico. We thank Geico for their support all throughout the season. If you are listening to this on a Sunday, maybe you're a Verballer, or a Monday or a Tuesday or a Wednesday or a Thursday, maybe even early Friday, Dan, SolidVerbalLive.com. We are going to be live in Atlanta. We are going to be inducting all sorts of very specific college football things into a Hall of Fame of our own creation, not affiliated. I again emphasize, not affiliated with the actual College Football Hall of Fame, which just also happens to be in Atlanta.
Yes.
Come on out, solidverbalive.com. Get your tickets. We still have some left, but they have gone quickly. And we'd love to have as many folks out there as we can. It is also an earlier show. It's 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, which means that we'll be done in time for the Pac-12 championship game. I presume you and I will want to watch that game somewhere.
Of course.
So maybe that's something we can also do with Verballers if anyone is ever so
Tenders
inclined.
Tenders with Ty.
Tenders with Ty. We could bring it back. Yeah.
Of course.
I don't know where you want to start, Dan. This was a wild week of games. This was really a wild week of games. We had a lot of turnover within the top 10. We, of course, are also recording this on the Sunday immediately following the college football season, which is when you have a lot of coaching news breaks. So there is a pretty good chance that when a lot of folks hear this, there will be a few news tidbits that we're unable to cover just because of the timing of this. In an on-demand audio universe, can't always be up to date with everything going on. But Why don't we start with what we saw in and around the world of college football as it relates to actual scores and results and what it means moving forward?
Are you thinking what I'm thinking? Jeff Undercuffler Jr. and the Akron Zips laying waste, laying absolute waste to Northern Illinois. Let's go.
We did talk about that this morning on Slack.
It's a great name.
Undercuffler Jr. But why don't we start with the results? We can obviously drizzle in some bits about coaching news. If anybody hears of any coaching news outside of what we already know, let us know in the chat and we'll do our best to try and get it here to tape. But here is what this thing looks like now moving forward. As a result of the games in week 13, your Pac-12 championship game is going to be Utah USC, which is wild. Wild. We'll get into that, Dan. I unfortunately must discuss the Platypus Cup with Oregon State.
All I hear in my head when I think about the Oregon Ducks and this season is the Sideshow Bob sound when he steps on a rake. That's all I hear all the time.
We've got the Big 12 championship game, which is now between Kansas State and TCU. That should be a pretty good game. We've got the SEC championship game, which perhaps does not have the amount of gravitas that we expected a week ago.
The juice.
Yeah, but LSU Georgia should still be a fun contest. Again, if you're going to be coming in from out of town, come to our live show. Saturday at 8 p.m., it's the ACC game between Clemson and North Carolina. Speaking of games that lack the gravitas of a week ago. And last but certainly not least, the Big Ten championship game, Michigan Wolverines against the Purdue Boilermakers, perhaps one more spoiler maker in them to really throw things into a tizzy on Saturday evening. So that is where we're at. Why don't we dive into what happened, though, in the Big Ten? Are you cool with that?
On this step on a rake Saturday? Of course I.
Hey, what happened?
What happened?
We're bringing Freddie Willard out to talk about the big game here, Dan. So obviously the big game of the weekend, maybe the game of the year, was Michigan-Ohio State. 45-23, the Wolverines win that game. This is a pretty good game for three quarters, I'd say. But in the fourth, Michigan started pulling away. You had the pinata moment. The 75-yard touchdown run by Donovan Edwards made it a 15-point game with 7 minutes late, or with about 7 minutes left, excuse me. Then you followed it up a few minutes later with another long touchdown run, this one an 85-yarder. Quite a day for him. Blake Corum dressed but only got two carries, Dan, so it was mostly whatever Donovan Edwards could do. It was honestly a lot like last year. It felt very similar to what we saw last season, but they got a lot more out of the quarterback position in J.J. McCarthy, who had three touchdown passes, 263 through the air. Last year, Cade McNamara didn't have to do a whole lot. This year, I don't know if J.J. McCarthy had to do all of this in order to get Michigan over the finish line because it felt like they were the better team throughout. However, this is a big deal to get that added quarterback pop and to win this one going away in the manner that they did. Ohio State just could not find that extra gear. They had a bunch of penalty yards, two turnovers, two interceptions, notably late. Where they stand with respect to playoff consideration is something that we can talk about. Why don't we focus on this game momentarily, and then we'll rattle off the other scores, because this was clearly the showpiece of the weekend. I saw you tweeted something out from our Solid Verbal account saying that Michigan now, for the second straight year, is a better team than Ohio State, and it feels like the gap is growing. What does that mean to you?
That they're beating them by double digits on a streak. It's my existence as a college football speaker is somebody who underthinks largely, maybe too often. But with the way, and you mentioned, I'm going to politely disagree with how you that it was an added bonus that J.J. McCarthy was hitting receivers deep, namely Cornelius Johnson early on. They needed that. They couldn't run the ball in the first half. And something that we've always said about like the difference between good and great teams is the ability to win in different ways. When something is taken away, when you can't stop a team, you got to score. When you can't score, you got to get stops. When you can't run, you got to pass. Stuff like that. And that's what Michigan Saturday was, because with a limited Blake Corum, a limited rushing attack, with Ohio State keying in on that and saying, all right, J.J. McCarthy, beat us deep, something you haven't been doing to teams lately. And Michigan said, wait, here's an interesting way to avoid red zone struggles. Don't go to the red zone and just bomb touchdowns from far away, because that's what was needed. And J.J. McCarthy stepped up in ways that we really have not seen a Michigan quarterback do against Ohio State in 93 years, right? It's been a minute. And so what Michigan was able to do over the course of that game, slowly wearing Ohio State down on the ground, slowly wearing out, Ohio State was able to get points. They were able to move the ball at times, especially through the air, but it seemed like Michigan won every moment. Yeah. And they made, even when Ohio State would win moments, everything appeared to be more difficult for Ohio State in those moments. And I thought a great example, if you're going to distill that game experience down to one play, it was, I think it's Mike Sanristil, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yep.
When CJ Stroud, who we talked about being sort of iffy when off platform and needing to improvise, throws it off his back foot to the corner of the end zone, lofts it up. I believe it was to Cade Stover, the tight end. You can correct me if I'm incorrect. And it appeared that, like, what an incredible individual performance from CJ Stroud to get that ball off and put it exactly where it needed to be. And that Michigan not only had a defender there, but had a defender who was more able to make a play in that moment than Ohio State was able to do. And I thought that was the difference in this game. It wasn't an effort thing. It wasn't, I mean, on that specific play, it was a game plan thing, and it was an ability to stick to an identity in the second half for Michigan, that they toughened up even when they would give Ohio State big plays or points, that I think the superior mental edge clearly goes to Michigan. And I did enjoy, by the way, because you mentioned the tweet that, you know, in the waning seconds and moments of this game, that, you know, Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt fawning over, you know, people wanted Jim Harbaugh gone after 2020. He reworks the contract and rededicates himself and makes changes on the coaching staff. And the turnaround that he has accomplished these last 2 years, taking the team to the playoff last year, developing these guys on offense, getting, you know, surviving coaching changes, two new coordinators this year. They did omit the very small detail that Jim Harbaugh tried to leave, that he desperately wanted to be the next head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. But other than that, everything they said was true. And Michigan's season, with its peaks and valleys, clearly peaked yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
If you are a Michigan fan, I am not, but if you are a Michigan fan, that experience had to have been, in the second half, especially that fourth quarter, pure college football pornography.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point that I'm getting at with J.J. McCarthy is, you know, something that you alluded to with Ohio State, and that is that it felt like Michigan just had the edge in moments. In the big spots in this game, Michigan kept coming up big. They kept finding a way to make a play. And Ohio State, in addition to the fact that they weren't necessarily on that same level when it came to those critical game moments, they also kind of lacked that extra gear. I said it earlier. I've been saying it the second half of the season. I'll say it again now. The Ohio State teams that really put the fear of God into me over the last, let's say, 5 years are the ones that you watch and you almost get that sense like you're watching Alabama when it's like, or old Alabama, I should say.
Right.
When you're just waiting for something to pop, you know, they've got the big play potential. You know that at any moment they can hand it off to somebody. The guy can hit a home run and suddenly it's a 21-point game. Ohio State has that kind of talent. But right. I've been waiting for those moments to appear more often than they have this season. And so I got to believe, even if J.J. McCarthy doesn't go off in the manner that he did, again, 12 of 24, 263 and three touchdowns. A very solid game for J.J. McCarthy in this big moment.
Oh, J.J. McCarthy was the better quarterback on the field.
Even if he doesn't go off in this manner, I still believe that Michigan finds a way to pull this one out. If it's closer, maybe the game has a different complexion. I do. I just think they were up for it, man. It felt like they were the better team out there in more ways than just one. And it wasn't just limited to J.J. It wasn't just limited to Donovan Edwards. It felt to me like the defense really came to play. And they prevented Ohio State from really getting into like that higher gear that I have feared in the past.
No, I disagree. Michigan absolutely loses that game with Cade McNamara.
Wow.
Okay. They needed those big plays. They absolutely needed something to stay in that game and to keep Ohio State on its toes, to keep safeties back, because all of a sudden they're popping big plays. Ohio State's secondary has been pretty leaky this year at times, and they took advantage. The game plan was there. They do not win that game with a replacement level efficient quarterback. They needed a star at quarterback, and that's exactly what they got. They had the best running back on the field, Now, partially that's due to Mayan Williams and Trey Henderson not really able to go. They had the best receiver on the field, right? I mean, in terms of performance.
Sure.
And Cornelius Johnson, what he was able to do and change the complexion of that game. Marvin Harrison Jr. and Amika Abuka have higher ceilings to me.
Totally.
As wide receivers.
Totally.
But yesterday, it was clear that Michigan was better at all of the important positions, possibly most importantly, head coach.
All right. So what this all means now, because Michigan won again 45-23.
Yeah.
We've got an opening in the top four, Dan. And this is, I suspect, going to dominate much of the conversation now for the next 48 hours, perhaps for the next week or so. Here is where things stood among the others that were out there, perhaps trying to push to get into that top four. LSU lost. LSU lost to Texas A&M 38-23. Clemson lost 31-30 against their in-state rival, the South Carolina Gamecocks, in the Palmetto Bowl. We can come back to this one and discuss it.
Yeah.
USC won. USC did play against Notre Dame, despite our jokes here before we hit go live. Notre Dame did play. They looked impressive, in my view. 38-27. You can go to the latest Verballer poll, the Verballer Top 10, which you can vote on every week, verballers.com. USC is the beneficiary of the turmoil that we saw at the top. If they can avenge their loss to Utah and win the Pac-12 championship, presumably they will be making their way into the college football playoff. Alabama won going away in the Iron Bowl 49-27 over Auburn. Auburn hung for about a quarter and a half and then it was over. Bama just pulled away. Your Oregon Ducks, not necessarily still in the hunt for the playoff, but still Rose very Bowl, much in the mix for the Pac-12, very much in the mix for just interesting conversation around what the postseason looks like for the Ducks. They lost. I'm not sure if you're aware of this.
What?
Lost.
Hold on. Let me verify. They were up 3 touchdowns late.
Lost.
That doesn't sound right.
38-34. They were up a lot late. And then, of course, we did have some other action. Two of the what I would consider win and ins. Georgia wins 37-14 over Georgia Tech. They led 7-3 after the first quarter and then just 10-7 at halftime. But as expected, that Georgia Tech magic was short lived. They went on a 27-0 run in the second half to win that one going away and finish 12-0. And TCU with an easy win, a nice breath of fresh air, nice little neck crack, Dan. No comeback needed. 62-14 over Iowa State, up 24-0 after one quarter, and then just kept their foot on the gas. So a lot to unpack there among those games I discussed. Why don't we start, though, with USC? Because USC is the team that benefits the most. You know, we can have this debate at some point about what USC's chances look like if they make it into the playoff, assuming they beat Utah. As for the game on Saturday, though, I was impressed. I don't know how you felt. I don't know how much of this game you watched.
Good chunk.
I came away very, very impressed with this version of USC.
Yeah. Look, Caleb Williams is the premier playmaker in college football because of his absolute ceiling with the ball. Does he know the called play? I say yes. Does it make it seem like he kind of knows better? He thinks he knows better after receiving the snap? Sometimes, if not most of the time, yes. Does it matter when you're as good as Caleb Williams? Not especially. Notre Dame is a good defense. We talked about going into this game, this was probably the first legit good defense that USC would face. Did they get to Caleb Williams consistently and make life difficult for him? Not especially. Not especially.
They brought, the thing was they brought pressure and they were able to move him out of the pocket.
Yeah, I'm saying bring him down.
But bring him down is altogether a different story.
Right. Anybody can just take a reservation. Yeah.
His elusiveness is clearly what made USC the better team in this game. Because Notre Dame was able to get theirs through the air. Drew Pine only missed 3 passes.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think what Caleb Williams can do with his feet, and you see a lot of people now out there comparing him to Patrick Mahomes. That was the big thing as Herbie and Fowler were fawning over Caleb Williams for 60 straight minutes on Saturday evening. He's the college football equivalent now of Patrick Mahomes. He's not Pat Mahomes. He's very good. By the way,
2023 fantasy thing. A little bit of Pat. That's a Pat Mahomes play.
Any 100%.
Reference to Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. 100%. So, I mean, look, I get it. He's very good. He's probably going to win the Heisman. I believe he's the front runner now after CJ Stroud and Ohio State lost. But his ability to make plays with his legs are what set USC apart here. He had three rushing touchdowns in this game. Folks will obviously want to talk about that. I wanted to talk about the USC defense because the USC defense has been somewhat embattled this season, mainly because in a lot of cases they don't play defense. And that was not the case on Saturday night. They are not a good pass defense. If Drew Pine is going for over 300 and only missing three passes against you, I think the proof is in the pudding that you're not a great pass defense. However, the ability of the USC defense to contain Notre Dame on the ground was pretty important in this game. USC came into this one and said, we want Drew Pine to beat us with his arm.
Yeah.
We want him to beat him. We want him to beat us with his arm. And granted, they had an early lead. Granted, if some mistakes don't go their way, perhaps it's a little bit of a different story. But USC, with that single-minded focus to try and take away the ground game, did do that. And they did put it in the hands of Drew Pine, and they did end up winning this game. So now they are on to the Pac-12 championship game, perhaps the playoff, an 11-1 season to close things out here for Lincoln Riley in year one, which is pretty damn impressive to me.
Yeah, you need to score 40 against USC. Yeah, I'm checking my notes here. Notre Dame did not score 40.
27 points, yeah.
Thus did not beat USC. USC's defense came to play in a manner in which they hadn't often this year, especially up front, keying in against the run, which Notre Dame was still able to move the ball, seeing an emptier secondary at times. I think Drew Pine at one point threw into quintuple coverage and still hit Michael Mayer.
Look, listen.
Yeah.
I am hopeful, again, that Marcus Freeman is leaving his card in those opposing locker rooms. Like, hey, Miller Moss, what's up, baby?
Yeah.
You want to come to Indiana in the winter? Why not?
Yeah.
Just leaving his card in places because Drew Pine, there are a lot of group of five teams that don't start Drew Pine. And it's the hand that they've been dealt this year, but it's the hard truth. He is not a good quarterback. What they have done with him, limited playbook, focusing on the ground, trying to shore up the line around him, getting to eight and four with the circumstances here in year one of the Marcus Freeman era, I think is really impressive with what they did. So I give him a lot of credit. I give Notre Dame as an offense a lot of credit, trying to win in various ways this season, being obviously very limited at quarterback. But this is a better team that they went up against. This was an offense that they couldn't score with.
Yeah.
This was an offense that had their defense on skates the whole game. And Caleb Williams is the main engine behind that. He's very, very good. He's gonna be that guy. He's going to be the first overall pick next year, barring any kind of like crazy things going down in 2024, I should say.
Yeah, this next year, as in not this draft, but the next
2024.
Yeah.
He will be the first overall pick.
Yeah.
He's very, very talented. He's going to be the Heisman winner. And frankly, I would love to see him play in a big playoff game. I think it just makes the product better. And whether they win or lose, it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
But I would love to see him in more big game spots because he's just a really talented player.
The story from this one, as much as I'm being genuine, I do like to indulge your Notre Dame fandom because it's where we can tap into the emotion of this sport.
Sure.
Story is USC. The story is the defense coming to play. The story is over the course of the season, I did not have USC in this spot. I thought they would lose a game or two because of this defense heading into the season and the turnover luck that was needed at times to win games and or separate themselves from teams. But we saw it come down at the end. They got that turnover against UCLA last week. It's very difficult, as we mentioned, to give up 45 points while forcing four turnovers. That's where USC's defense was last week. They get a little bit healthier. They get an offense that's not a huge complete threat in Notre Dame. But, you know, weathering a starting running back being injured and Travis Dye, weathering both Mario Williams and Jordan Addison going down, weathering, I think it's Zach Gentry, the linebacker going down, that sort of ASU transfer, tall, thin guy. They don't have a particularly deep roster. They're thin at a number of spots, but that they are winning clunkers, that they're scoring points in Lincoln Riley's first season. Now, Caleb Williams, ultimate luxury to cover up for a lot of warts. the fact that they are sort of sliding into a playoff conversation. I don't take Utah lightly, especially because they've already lost to Utah. I think it's a remarkable job done by Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams. And we've seen them sort of start and stop in a number of games, but USC to sort of hang around, draft behind the opportunity truck, which we like to say, and here's that opportunity. Here's the opportunity Friday night against a good but not great Utah team. And having Oregon fall off, having, you know, Washington, you know, peak right now, it seems, but losing that game to ASU ultimately does them in. It was a good schedule for USC, getting this version of Notre Dame, getting no Washington and no Oregon from the Pac-12 North. That's nothing they can control. They controlled what they could, and they scored a crap load of points doing it. Yeah. Great job.
All right, let's go to the two teams that lost that I mentioned earlier. We'll get to Oregon next, but LSU and Clemson both had opportunities here to advance their own playoff claims. The LSU game was tied at 17 until the fourth quarter, and A&M ripped off 21 straight, put it out of reach. They had no answer for Devon Achane, who went for a career-high 215 on the ground, two touchdowns. So afterwards, Brian Kelly said, quote, "We just needed more juice, more fire. We seem to lack that today. That's on me." That's notable, Dan. That's the first time Brian Kelly's ever taken responsibility for anything.
Whoa.
So at least we're growing as people now throughout the 2022 college football season. Mm-hmm. As LSU goes down, they finish the year, the regular season, 9-3. And then on the Clemson front, you know, we were joking on Slack during this game because Spencer Rattler came out for Carolina and threw a pick six, I believe, on the first possession.
Yeah, it was 2 minutes into the game, real quick.
And then he bounced back. And DJU threw for 99 yards and was 8 of 29 and generally not very good. Maybe hurt, but just in general, not good at all. As Clemson goes down, Clemson, believe it or not, had an outside run at this playoff thing, depending on how things shook out in front of them. Not anymore. They finished the year 10-2. Carolina finishes the year impressively with two top 10 wins, consecutive top 10 wins over Tennessee. And now Clemson to close out an 8-4 campaign in 2022, Dan. So looking at those two games, unpack them for me. What jumped out to you?
The juice. The juice, right? It's Texas A&M scoring 30. It's Texas A&M turning to Devon Achane and saying, keep doing what you're doing. It's Connor Wegman looking accurate. It's Moose Muhammad, I guess, being not shadow suspended for wearing an armband. It's Texas A&M playing to their potential, obviously getting healthier, and they have the flu stuff a couple weeks ago. Like, there's been a lot in the way, some of which was, or maybe most of which, was self-imposed with some of the decisions they were making on offense. But Texas A&M played to their potential, and it will now haunt and give Texas A&M fans hope for the next 10 months, which is what college football is. And LSU just looked flat. LSU, to finish that game, looked flat, and their defense has been largely pretty good this year, but I think it was more about Texas A&M than anything. And LSU has had flaws and has won despite some of the flaws. It's not the way you want to head into the SEC championship game. I didn't have high hopes for the Tigers against Georgia anyway. But no, the story to me is Texas A&M. You know, to the victors go the spoils. And the fact that their offensive line, beat up as it has been, was able to perform against some pretty talented LSU players up front, I came away very, very impressed with you know, A&M, who we had sort of penciled in as 1-2-3 Cancun, is Miami. Just a team ready to be done and get into the offseason, hit the portal, whatever. A&M, with the bad blood that has emerged between these two programs.
Yeah, that's right.
Crazy impressive. Crazy impressive to finish that, because that requires a good amount of mental fortitude in addition to everything they were doing on the field. And still, it's hard to say, hey, it's still a good season, LSU. It's year one. I'm in that position as an Oregon fan, going 9-3 with a lot of promise is not fun if you lose in very specific ways. And so good for A&M. They're not going to a bowl game, but good for A&M.
Good for A&M. It was nice to see that fight here to close things out. Just to close the loop on Clemson, Dan.
Yeah.
They got to make some changes. You know, it's weird to say that when you finish 10-2, which is a good season by pretty much any metric, but compared to where Clemson has been, I think that is what is alarming here. If you've watched Clemson this year, it was clear that, you know, if you want to talk about juice, right, they didn't have that same juice that they've had over the last 5 years or so. DJU was not very good for good chunks of the season. Got better. Maybe some of the play calling improved around him, but it wouldn't be a stretch for me if DJU transferred out, if it became all club level all the time in 2023.
Right.
I don't know if Dabo considers any changes on either the OC or DC front, but again, this is a team that had a different feel to it. Definitely not that killer instinct that we've been used to seeing from the Clemson Tigers. On defense especially, I thought were pretty disappointing. And still a really good defense, but I just expected so much more. I remember when we did the previews, this was like maybe the best defensive front in the country, and they had injuries. Right. Like, I know that there are circumstances here, but I'm curious to see what Dabo does with the benefit of, you know, hindsight and an offseason to maybe make things right, because talent isn't an issue, but this season definitely left me wanting more.
Yeah, so as for the Clemson-South Carolina game, strange game. I don't know if you saw Clemson's attempt at a fake kickoff return that sort of had four or five players huddle, and then a player emerge with the ball, and then immediately fumble the ball. I think it was Phil Maffa. Clemson's offense is a little bit broken, and I don't know if it's squarely on DJU, but the offensive line has been inconsistent, receivers have been inconsistent, Will Shipley's been consistent, and consistently very, very good. That dude runs and runs and runs.
He's great, man.
You know,
I love him.
He is. I'm sure announcers love calling Will Shipley games. Like, his legs keep on churning, yeah. Right? He's that kind of running back. So crazy impressive to watch him. Surprised to see against South Carolina, Clemson unable to get pressure on Spencer Rattler for large swaths
and
of
that's,
this game.
That's the thing, right? Because
that was different.
When Spencer Rattler transferred over to South Carolina, The thought among many people who cover this was, well, he's better than what they had. He's better than Zebedee Guy and Nolan, but needs a line in front of him. And the line still hasn't really been that great. This season's been better. But up against Clemson, seemingly that would be a mismatch.
Yeah. I'm in on South Carolina's energy to close out the year. I'm in on Shane Beamer winning games. Both look, the Tennessee game, they stomped the Vols. And part of that's Hendon Hooker, but they were stomping the Vols when Hendon Hooker was in there. And then being good enough to hang around and give yourself an opportunity, as weird as the Clemson game was, to make plays, to win games, to win something close, to just be on stage, right, when things are happening. Awesome end to the year. Because there were times this year that South Carolina looked absolutely outclassed. And I don't know. The recovery from that, the bounce back from that was great. And as for Clemson, I think all your points are valid. And look, now that we're going to get your precious 12-team playoff, you can watch Clemson throw the ball some more. You can watch Utah not hit receivers downfield. You can watch LSU, you know, play three quarters of football. You can watch Oregon not stop anybody on the ground. Thank God we have to get an opportunity to watch Ohio State fold against another good team with a 12-team playoff tie. Congratulations to you and yours.
Sorry that I just want to see more football. I'm sorry.
No, it's good.
Is that okay?
No, everybody should get a mulligan tie. Participation trophies. That's your philosophy. I get it.
You're such a dick. All right.
I know.
Let's move on. Let's talk about Oregon on that note, Dan.
Please.
Why don't we talk about the...
I was rooting for Washington last night so I wouldn't have to watch Oregon play another consequential game.
So we had a vintage Rod Gilmore game for a little bit.
Oh, my God.
Rod Gilmore called the Oregon-Oregon State game, and they had problems with the signals. I don't know if it was like the power outage that happened in and around the Corvallis area earlier, and I don't know what it was, but there were some weird signal things coming through, at least on my end. And I messaged you. I was like, oh, we got the Gilmore game again. They didn't take the good cameras, but seems like they cleared that up. Oregon led this one 34-17 with 14:57 left in the fourth quarter. Oregon State ripped off 21 unanswered. Stole a win right out from underneath Oregon. The Beavs ran for 268 and five touchdowns to make up for the fact that they couldn't throw at all. They threw for 60 yards, two interceptions. Oregon State finishes 9-3. This was a huge win for them. They rushed the field afterwards. So good on them. Good on Jonathan Smith. You feel good for Oregon State. I will say you can't really have watched this game and come away from it feeling like Oregon didn't give this one away. Like, I mean, it was good for Oregon State to capitalize on short fields, but a horrible sequence of events here in the fourth quarter for the Oregon Ducks. They gave Oregon State a short field on three straight drives, one on a face mask penalty after a long kickoff return, another after the punter just straight up dropped the snap at the 2-yard line.
Good snap. Totally good snap. Yeah.
Just dropped it. Got the yips, dropped it, 2-yard line. And then another when they went for it on their own 29 and got stopped. There was also another play down on the goal line. I forget the exact circumstance. I'm sure you remember when the play calling was pretty sus. Down.
Ooh, sus. Are you a youth? Are you mid, Ty?
Pretty sus down on the goal line.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It just like I said to you, like, does ASU know what they're getting with Kenny Dillingham here? Because there were some questionable calls in some key spots there. But all of those in totality were what sprung Oregon State to the 38-34 win over the Ducks.
All your points are valid. I have no problem with Dan Lanning's aggression. I have no problem going for it on fourth down. Some of the play calling, there was an early jet sweep to a receiver with running backs on the field and not a small receiver who could change direction quickly. It was Troy Franklin, who's, I don't know, 6'2", 6'3". There were weird moments in both execution and decision-making and red zone stuff. But here's what it comes down to. Oregon's an elite loser. I put that moniker on Indiana and Maryland. If you want to talk about different ways in which Oregon has lost this year, or if not the last few years, Mario Cristobal era, Mark Helfrich era, whatever, Oregon is a buffet of ways to lose. And so yesterday, up 21, up 17, relatively late, you talked about the short fields. Oregon State has a backup quarterback in Ben Gulbranson, who completed, it says here, two passes in the second half of a comeback win.
Yeah.
Do you know how difficult that is, Ty? Six passes for the entire game. At one point, I was texting with Oregon friends, how many players on Oregon's defense, how many players would Oregon need on defense to stop Oregon State on the ground when they know a run is coming? 13 players? 15 players? 15 players and a moose just occupying space? Oregon did not lose this game because of any one or three moments. They lost this game because of defense. They lost this game because of, you know, fumbling a punt, of course. We're not even having this conversation. There was a pass. If you want to talk about specific moments, Oregon had a pass late that Bo Nix threw that if it were 6 inches higher, there was nothing but grass between Terrence Ferguson, starting tight end, and the end zone. Despite everything terrible that happened, that's another moment that Bo Nix just threw it a little bit low. And you could see that he was not able to get ball. Like, he was skipping a couple balls that were there, passes were there, that he still doesn't have the ankle to fully step in and plant at the base. So Jonathan Smith is a very bright coach. The defense has improved for Oregon State. Oregon still did a lot of stomping them when they had the ball. Oregon State didn't have to throw the ball, and Oregon couldn't stop the run. That's, if you want to distill it into anything, it's fill A gap, fill B gap, fill C gap, fill D gap, whatever, set an edge and make them throw it. Just make them throw it. At a certain point, just like let this backup quarterback who cannot run a passing attack at all, let him beat you. Oregon has a defensive minded head coach. They spent all this money on defensive assistants. They've recruited defense relatively well these past few years. They couldn't fill a lane. They couldn't tackle. They couldn't do anything. And so for that, they deserve to lose. They absolutely deserve to lose that game. And I'm thankful once again that Washington beat Washington State and put 700 yards on the Cougs so that I didn't have to watch. I don't have to watch following solidverbalive.com, smellticeair.com, our live show in Atlanta this coming Friday. I don't have to watch the Oregon defense take on Caleb Williams mercifully, because just awful, an awful watch from this Oregon team. And now Kenny Dillingham is the new coach of ASU, Oregon's 1 year offensive coordinator, really good offensive coordinator by and large. But yeah, we might have seen Oregon, if Washington loses, we might have seen Oregon look really good against USC and make it into a 12 team playoff tie, your precious 12 team playoff. And thankfully,
my precious 12 team playoff.
We do not. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Oregon goes down, tough loss for them. But again, I think all things considered, not a bad campaign, if only because of establishing Bo Nix, if only because of establishing Dan Lanning as a guy who can coach in the Pac-12. There were moments this season, right? As you just called out, there were those elite loser moments. But I think you feel pretty good about where things stand on the Oregon front, especially now after seeing what Miami's turned into in a short period of time.
By the way, to be clear, if you're an Oregon fan listening to this and you're selling off your Dan Lanning stock, I'll buy it all up. I'm fully all in. I'm fully all in. This is we're buying low at the moment. I'm in on Dan Lanning. I'm in on future staffs. I'm in on Oregon recruiting. I'm in on all of this. But you got to weather some of these bumps. And it was a not fun bump. How about that?
A not fun bump. Why don't we close out all things Pac-12 here, since you called out the Arizona State thing. Kenny Dillingham reportedly going to be the new coach at ASU. Again, he's 32, spent the year as the offensive coordinator for the Ducks. I believe he is an ASU alum. So
yeah, not reportedly. It's official. It's official now.
Yeah, I guess as of about a half hour ago.
Yeah.
Arizona won Territorial Cup, though, 38-35. They snapped a 5-game losing streak. They did it on the back of Michael Wiley, who I hope makes it into our Dude Alerts today, Dan.
He is. He's in there.
214 and 3 touchdowns on the ground, the second most rushing yards in this rivalry since, remember the name Trung Candidate?
Of course. I was going to say Kadeem Carey, but Trung Candidate, great.
Trung Candidate back in 1998 ran for 288, which was a nutso game. This is a fun game, by the way, in the second half. 5 touchdowns, 429 yards just in the third quarter. So not a lot of defense, but a good game to watch. ASU had 5 turnovers, which, let's be real, 5 turnovers always get you. Now they got a new coach on the way. You mentioned Washington. Washington put up all the points, all the yards, 51-33. They win the Apple Cup over Wazoo. Michael Penix Jr., 485 and 3 touchdowns, Dan.
Ridiculous. In a winning effort. And Kalen DeBoer, the Pac-12 coach? I don't know. There's been some really good Pac-12 coaching performances. But yeah, Kalen DeBoer and the job he's done with Penix. Defense has a ways to go, but those receivers finally get to play in a good offense. They put up 200 last year, total yards, against Wazoo. Not a great stat to judge anything by, but when the difference is 500 yards against the same opponent, significant. Because Washington State has had a pretty good defense this year. Washington just has that much better an offense and appear to be, if USC beats Utah, in prime position to go to the Rose Bowl.
The Rose Bowl. Jerry Palm projects Washington to the Rose Bowl against Ohio State, which would be...
Yeah.
A great first stanza.
Yeah, that happened a few years ago. That was a Peterson-Urban game. But yeah, that'll be great if that happens.
Also in the Pac-12, Utah runs one up on Colorado. Utah going back to the Pac-12 championship game. Of course, there was some turmoil throughout the conference, as we just discussed, with Oregon State and Washington winning. But Utah now headed back to square off against USC. That game again was in Salt Lake earlier this year. Utah won 43-42, excuse me.
Yeah, went for two.
Went for two and won it. So this should be an interesting second act here. Also of note on this front, Colorado went 1-11. They're looking for a new coach. The rumor, per our friend Bruce Feldman, is that they are after Deion Sanders to be their next coach.
Okay.
Bruce says that there is a legit chance it could happen. We shall see. That would definitely be a talking point and something that could inject some life into the Colorado program, which has been down for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is
it doesn't happen, but yeah.
My guess is it doesn't happen, but I admire the willingness to try and make a splash here. So
yeah, definitely.
Speaking of other coaching vacancies in the Pac-12, David Shaw has stepped down.
Saw that.
After 12 seasons at Stanford, he steps down. After a 3-9 campaign, BYU knocked them off by a 35-26 score. An interesting job that we can discuss, I guess, in a little bit more detail as the week progresses. But a bit of a shocker to wake up to that one, Dan. That one caught me by surprise.
Yeah, and we were heading just to an uncomfortable place because it didn't seem like Stanford would ever get rid of him, much in the way that doesn't seem like Northwestern would ever get rid of Pat Fitzgerald. Because of what he's meant to the school and obviously what Shaw has done in terms of his highs, which have been higher than Pat Fitzgerald's. But it just seems Stanford has been trending in the wrong direction. They have the blip in 2020, but since Christian McCaffrey and a little bit of Bryce Love covering up for some, issues on defense and play calling inconsistencies and system staleness, I would say, on both sides of the ball, losing key assistants and not replacing them with comparable guys. Stanford, when they're going, had a really incredible identity and, churned out NFL players. But no, it seemed like they were due for a change. Things just were not, the ship was not able to be turned around. So you know, it'll be fascinating to see who they hire. Obviously, Brent Brennan has had a good amount of success in that area at San Jose State, and his name came up a lot for the Arizona job. But yeah, it's gonna need somebody who is, because Stanford can't really hit the portal, and the early recruiting deadline really affects them negatively. So somebody who's able to get creative and develop and recruit nationally to arguably the most attractive place to go to college in the country, just in terms of, you know, getting an offer from Stanford. How do you turn it down? But yeah.
And to close things out in the Pac-12, we had UCLA 35-28 over Cal. This is a good game, actually.
It was a fun back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah. Cal scored a go-ahead touchdown with 11 minutes left. UCLA scored a few minutes later to retake the lead. Big game again for Zach Charbonnet and for the UCLA ground attack. 352 and three scores on the day. They finished 9-3.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Let's go over the Big Ten, Dan.
Please.
Purdue, 30-16 over Indiana. They win the Big Ten West. The Big Ten West, sort of like a rare Pokemon that everybody was trying to capture, but nobody could. Finally, it is Purdue, Dan.
Yeah.
27 second half points get Purdue to Indianapolis to square off against your Michigan Wolverines.
Does that make, I'm not that familiar with Pokemon. Does that make Jeff Brom Ash? Is it Ash Ketchum? Isn't Ash the main protagonist in the Pokemon universe? Catch them all.
I'm familiar with the game, but I didn't watch the show.
Okay. I did watch the Purdue game. It was a little bit odd. Graham Mertz struggled, no Braylon Allen, and you know, it's easy to say like, oh, the Wisconsin offense struggled. Minnesota's on their backup quarterback who actually played really well, down their best receiver, relying on Mo Ibrahim to do everything. The defense was sort of the rock solid unit all season long for the Gophers. So once again, to walk away from this with the axe.
Yeah.
Good for Minnesota. Purdue in their Oaken bucket. I don't know why I just started talking about that game, but Wisconsin's on my mind. Purdue winning the old Oaken bucket game with Devin Maccabee, who's been sort of a revelation these past few weeks. Yeah. He gets hurt, comes back. Aiden O'Connell, really slow start for Purdue in this one. Dexter Williams, the Indiana quarterback, goes down. Great for Purdue. A Purdue team that seemed to have a weird year. Your guy Chuck Sizzle, though, was like the thing that they could count on all season long. And the defense came to play ultimately against Indiana.
He was extracted, perhaps Argo style, out of that Iowa offense and reborn at Purdue.
Yeah.
So good for
him. Absolutely.
Perhaps Wisconsin's on your mind because of some news that just came across the wire here.
That's probably why. Yeah.
Wisconsin, of course, lost the Axe game. Minnesota, congratulations. 8-4. Nice way to finish out for the Gophers. Hitting that over, by the way, which, never a doubt, took until the final game of the year, but advised that one very early on and finally paid out for me. Wisconsin reportedly targeting Luke Fickell as its next coach. So it had been assumed now for the last couple weeks that they might just give that thing to Jim Leonard. But That appears to not be the case. It does sound as if Wisconsin making a strong push now, again, per Pete Thamel from ESPN, to bring Luke Fickell up to Madison, away from Cincinnati. They are hoping to get a deal done within the next 48 hours. I think by any measure of coach metrics, of coach whatever, that would be a huge coup for the Wisconsin Badgers. So we'll see if they can get that done. Yeah. We'll see if they can get that done. But to get a guy like Luke Fickell would be, that would be a pretty big deal.
I don't think, and we'll discuss this more at another time, I don't think Pete Thamel is tweeting out and the reports are circulating about Luke Fickell being targeted for the Wisconsin job mean that they're hoping, no, Luke Fickell is going to be the next coach of Wisconsin. And it's all just a formality at this point. And my initial reaction, as I'm finding out on the show,
yep,
same. Wisconsin's a very, very good job. Luke Fickell, a very, very, a playoff head coach. My suspicion is he doesn't want to start over and learn to recruit Texas in the Big 12. And if you are somebody who is connected to high schools in Ohio and the Midwest, it will be easier to recruit to Wisconsin in the Big Ten and to play in that conference than it would be to recruit in the Big 12. And Luke Fickell has earned this. Absolutely. With his success at Cincinnati, I think it's an absolute no-brainer hire for Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Probably a no-brainer. Probably a really good fit for Luke Fickell. So going on that logic that it's being tweeted out that he's being targeted is more than just being targeted. Really interesting, fascinating move, and can't wait to see how it plays out.
In other coach news,
yes,
in the Big Ten, Nebraska hired Matt Rhule. Dan,
they did.
Up until about 24 hours ago, that was the biggest news. Around the college football coaching world. Matt Rhule, of course, fired by the Carolina Panthers, had a lot of success in the college ranks, first at Temple, next at Baylor before he jumped over to the NFL. It was reported that Rhule would be in the hunt. He would be up for listening to offers. Nebraska didn't feel like the best fit per se, but I think it makes a lot of sense. Matt Rhule has done a lot with less everywhere he's been. He hasn't exactly been in recruiting hotbeds at either Temple or Baylor. And he's always found a way to coach those programs up to get the most out of the talent on hand. I think Nebraska is craving somebody who can just preach fundamentals, who can get the most of what's on hand without having to go out there and bring in five-star recruits. They would kill for that right now after the last couple seasons of error-prone football. So on many levels, the hire of Matt Rhule is a pretty big deal. I am skeptical that it's a long-term thing. You know where I stand on Rhule. I believe at some point in the next 5 years, he'll be the next coach at Penn State. But at least if nothing more than an interim, you will take it if you are a Nebraska fan. Nebraska, by the way, won the Heroes Trophy over Iowa.
They did.
24-17. They went up 24-0 in this game before the Padilla Flotilla came in.
Yeah.
And
Spencer Petras is hurt. Yeah.
Tried to lead a comeback. Spencer Petras, like you said, hurt. 1-for-6 passing. Too little too late in the end, though Iowa did make a push here.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the final 24-17. So quick thoughts on Rhule.
My first thought is good for Nebraska for winning that game. You know, the score like they did and the passing attack to work out like it did against a very, very good Iowa defense. It's a very, very slim silver lining on what was probably a very difficult season as a Nebraska fan. But you beat Iowa, you beat a ranked team, or you beat, you know, whatever Iowa's places in the sport is. The Matt Rhule thing is interesting to me. I think if you're a Nebraska fan, you should be very happy because the upside is clear. That Nebraska isn't necessarily a place that's going to string together top 15 recruiting classes. And Matt Rhule is not necessarily a coach who is going to find a top 15 recruiting class. He is very vocal about we're going to find, or he was at Baylor. You know, he puts together the number 9 class, number 10 class, number 8 class in the Big 12 and turns it into a championship contender. Obviously, they lose late, I think, in overtime to Oklahoma to finish out his career there. I think it's a good hire. My concern is it's a come down hire. My concern is Matt Rhule wants to be an NFL coach, or at least wanted to relatively recently. And there is an absolute chance that he said to himself, I like college way better. I like reclamation projects in college way better. I connect with recruits and their parents on the trail way better than I connect to grown men in the NFL. But come down hires also mean there's not as much juice and fire. And that to me is like when he goes to Baylor, that's a huge reclamation project post Art Briles and Jim Grobe. And so he gets that long contract. He's got an even longer contract now. I think it's an 8-year deal that Nebraska gave him. He got a 7-year deal at Baylor, if memory serves. And so expectations are different at Nebraska. But if you're, you know, Trev Alberts at Nebraska and Matt Rhule is available and Matt Rhule has had success turning in listless programs and, you know, bringing electricity to those programs like he did at Temple and Baylor. If you can get that done, you got to take swings if you're Nebraska. There's nobody obvious to me.
Yeah, I think
that Nebraska could have hired and it would have been like, oh, man, he is going to kill it there because he is on the way up.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's really great for Nebraska, but I still see it as a toss up that he's going to win 9 games.
Well, I mean, I think if nothing more, Matt Rhule wins more of those one score games that Scott Frost lost.
Probably. And we'll see, you know, does he bring Phil Snow with him? And the snow, what do we call it? The snow effect, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Snow advisory.
Snow advisory,
like,
yeah.
Like, that's if Matt Rhule is in college with a bonkers good defensive coordinator, he's going to win a bunch of games. That's the sort of reality. He gets the most out of his players.
All right. Elsewhere in the Big Ten, just to round things out, Penn State won by 19, exactly on the point spread over Michigan State. They finished 10-2, Michigan State 5-7. We had Illinois 41-3 over Northwestern. Northwestern finishes the year 1-11. You could argue, despite the fact that they're champions of Europe, they also may be patient
champions!
Patient zero of Nebraska-itis. 5 interceptions and a fumble to close out their season. Did you know, Dan, they finished last, tied for last with respect to Central Michigan, tied for last in FBS with a negative 18 turnover margin, which I cannot emphasize enough, is inconceivably bad.
Yeah.
That is inconceivably bad. You gave over 18 more turnovers than you took in.
You would think just accidentally falling on somebody else's fumble every so often would get you to like a respectable minus 7.
It's bad. It's bad if you finish the year minus 5.
Yeah.
Minus 6.
That's bad.
You talk about that in the offseason, in the preseason, about things we need to fix. Mm-hmm. Those are just 5 or 6 in the wrong direction can swing a couple games. We see it every week.
Uh-huh.
18 is impossibly bad. Impossibly bad.
It's fun that USC with their plus 20 and Northwestern with their minus 18 will soon share a conference and what that could mean on the same field. USC is not going to replicate plus 20, but one can dream. One can dream. Northwestern had a disastrous season. 41-11 domestically.
41-3 was the final. Illinois won. Illinois projected to the ReliaQuest Bowl.
Great.
Formerly the Outback Bowl on January 2nd against South Carolina.
New Year's Eve, a New Year's Bowl in a warm place. It's not something Illinois sees all that often. An incredibly successful season if you're the Illini, which could have been a little bit more, as in the last 2 weeks, they were clearly the best team to play Michigan. So
that's right. All right. And Maryland 37-0 over Rutgers. Maryland
saw that. Projected. Talia played and went off. Yeah.
Yep. Talia played. Maryland projected to the Guaranteed Rate Bowl in Phoenix against Oklahoma.
Okay.
We will talk about the Big 12 next here. We had Texas 38-27 over Baylor. We had West Virginia 24-19 over Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State, I think, pack it up, pack it in a little bit.
Backup quarterback game.
Backup quarterback game. That's right. We had Texas Tech 51-48 in overtime over the aforementioned Oklahoma Sooners. This is a wild game.
There were
six lead changes in the second half. Oklahoma could not hold on to an 18-point lead late or earlier in the game, as Texas Tech rallied late to make it 48 all at the end of regulation. Oklahoma then missed a 34-yard field goal in the first frame of overtime. Texas Tech gets it back. Trey Wolf knocks it through from 35 out to give Texas Tech the walk-off victory to get to 7-5. A ton of stats here, as you might expect from the final score. I will say Dylan Gabriel 449 and 6 passing touchdowns in a losing effort, Dan.
Yeah, raise your hand if you had West Virginia with the most impressive defensive performance of the Big 12 rivalry weekend. Maybe TCU as well, obviously, but Iowa State was dealing with a backup quarterback. As far as the Big 12 goes, it was a Friday game, I believe, Baylor-Texas. Weird first half with a safety. I think it was a throwaway safety kind of thing. And Baylor has a scoop and score late when Quinn Ewers on a strip sack. I came away crazy impressed with Texas's ability to continue to get better, strong at linebacker, and be patient. That there was something about Steve Sarkisian that worried me that he was going to keep throwing it in second halves and throw from behind or throw one ahead to, like, you know, the all gas, no breaks mentality. And there was something refreshingly patient about the offensive mindset being, why don't we just give it to Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson?
No.
Why don't we do what's working? It's not crazy fun and sexy all the time, but 5 yards on first down or 7 yards on second down works when you're trying to win football games. And Baylor played a remarkable first half, but even when it was tight in the second half,
yeah,
Texas stepping back and saying, there's plenty of time left in this game. We don't need to freak out. Maybe let's give it to the best running back in the country and see what he can do with maybe the best backup running back in the country in Roschon Johnson in terms of the versatility that he offers. So the impressive thing from Texas to me was the patience on offense mixed with the continued step forward on defense.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned Bijan Robinson combined with Roschon Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
They went off for 42 carries and 256 yards and 4 touchdowns, which is pretty
much. How many pass attempts for Quinn Ewers? Like 16, right?
Yeah, not many.
Three times as many. That's great.
Yep.
That's what you do when Bijan Robinson says, yeah, I'm going to play for your team today.
Texas ran whenever it wanted. And yeah. I think if you're a Baylor fan, this game was kind of a microcosm for the season because it never felt like they got into rhythm.
No Gavin Holmes, but yeah.
No Gavin Holmes, but just, again, left wanting more. That's kind of the broad arc of this Bears season. Just knowing that there's more out there, but being unable to tap into it for one reason or another. That was kind of, I thought, the takeaway here in this one here is, again, Texas wins by 11. The final game here that I did not mention in the Big 12, Kansas State knocks off Kansas 47-27. Kansas State came out hot. They jumped out to a 23-7 lead, excuse me, in the first quarter. Kansas came back a little, but K-State pulled away as the game wore on. K-State can play spoiler. I have spoiler in air quotes here because I don't even know what that really means. Because
they can play spoiler as for who wins the Big 12.
They can play spoiler as for who wins the Big 12, and they're good enough to beat TCU. We know that.
Yeah.
What it means if TCU loses with respect to the playoff, who knows? Because really anything outside the top four at this point is pretty damn murky. So we'll see if that, you know, if that happens, then we'll talk about it then. We will obviously be previewing this game as we normally do in the build up to conference championship week. So more to come on the K-State front, but took care of business here in a big way. They win the Sunflower Showdown.
Yeah, Kansas State would, and we'll talk about it, as you mentioned, in the preview coming up in a couple of days. Kansas State beats TCU 38-3, 41-7, 44-10. It's a conversation worth having, is if we want to live in a playoff TCU world. The odds of that happening don't really seem to exist.
No.
Max Duggan, great game. No Quinn Johnston for TCU. No, as we mentioned earlier, no need to come back. It was wire-to-wire dominance from TCU against what was a very good Iowa State defense, but there was only so much they could do because Iowa State's offense has been bad all year, and they found a way to get worse without Hunter Deckers, who goes down early. TCU, man. Max Duggan and his story, that turnaround story, Sonny Dykes and the job he's done, that should, you know, required national acclaim from everybody who's paying even a little bit of attention. They're a feel-good story, but also a drill-you story.
Hey, now.
Otherwise, yeah, great performance from Will Howard and Kansas State. It's Kansas, and Jalen Daniels did come back. But Deuce Vaughn plays for Kansas State, and Malik Knowles is another name. He didn't put up huge stats through the air yesterday, but, you know, on the ground in the return game, they're getting the most out of players that should have been performing, much like TCU these last couple of years. And so I think the Big 12 championship game is by far the most fascinating one, just on a football level, on a back and forth competitive level. I can't wait to watch it.
All right, let's go over to the ACC if we could for a second.
Yes.
We had Florida State knocking off Florida. Fun game. Highest scoring game in the rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
45-38. The Noles win. We had NC State going to overtime against North Carolina and winning 30-27. We had Duke, your Duke Blue Devils, projected to play your Oregon Ducks in the Holiday Bowl.
Weird.
34-31 over Wake.
Is it really Holiday Bowl projection? So who would go to the Alamo Bowl? I guess maybe Utah, I guess. Right. I don't know.
I did Control F and typed in Duke, and that's what it told me.
I love the Holiday Bowl, and I'm going to be in Southern California. Well, actually, maybe not during the Holiday Bowl. OK, continue.
We had Syracuse knocking off Boston College. Congrats to Cuse, by the way.
Yeah.
On getting a win. You know, they had qualified for a bowl back on October the 15th.
And since
have not won.
Yeah.
Finally get the win here. So 7-5, a nice season for the Cuse, I think, all told. Also a good game for Boston College quarterback, the young Emmett Moorhead, who looks like the real deal. Wasn't a good season.
How many yards in a losing effort? Do you like have it in front of
250,
you?
250, I want to say. Somewhere
Emmett Moorhead? Oh, I'm thinking of EJ Warner had like 527 yards in a losing effort. Yeah, I confused the two. A three-quarter non-performance for Syracuse.
That's right.
Right? And then they decided, oh, right. We have Sean Tucker. Oh, right. We have Oronda Gadsden. Oh, right. Garrett Schrader can be pretty good sometimes. And they pour it on in the fourth quarter. So, yes, good win for the Cuse.
And last but certainly not least, speaking of non-performances, Miami loses, goes out with a whimper, 42-16 against Pitt. Pitt led 28-0 at half. They just collected an easy win. This was like a formality. They just had to show up. They got their W and they went home.
The meals on wheels of games. Yeah.
it was DoorDash delivered to them. Yeah. Not a sponsor, could be.
Yeah.
Miami goes out with a whimper. Just a really bad first season for Mario Cristobal. And look, I know they had some injury stuff. I know they're kind of feeling this thing out. It's year one. I know the recruiting is strong.
Tyler Van Dyke got hurt early on. Yeah.
You know, like, I know there are mitigating circumstances that make this thing maybe a little bit more understandable.
Yeah.
This was a limp effort. This was a limp effort. They've been checked out for a couple weeks now. You hope it gets better. I will give Cristobal the benefit of the doubt. I still believe he's a good coach. If nothing more, he's a good recruiter, but.
Sure.
Wow. What a way to go out, huh?
Yeah. I mean, Miami football, playing against Miami football, is ACC on easy mode, right? Like, oh, yeah. We can enter. The guys are jumping up 40 feet in the air to intercept balls, right? It's just, it's all good. You know, you get back in a rhythm when you get to play against Miami. You know, we complimented them last week when it looked like they had the bones on defense to build something interesting. And they most certainly do not on offense right now.
No.
And so that came to pass with the turnovers, with the inconsistencies. And man, if Mario Cristobal is in fact an offensive line guy, he will earn his paycheck in redoing whatever it is up front that Miami is offering to the ACC.
Yeah. As for quick thoughts on all the games that I mentioned.
Yes.
You know, I just a couple things that jump out to me. Jordan Travis, really good on the ground.
Man, that was a fun game.
It was a fun game, right? This was like Florida State went up. Florida State trailed at half, then scored on their next three drives after half to go up by 14. Then Florida came back to tie it up with about 8 minutes left. Jordan Travis, so really good with his legs. Billy Napier said it in the post game that his legs were the difference here. Finished with a season high 15 carries, 83 yards. Those 83 yards were huge in helping Florida State get over the finish line here. The North Carolina State game was interesting in that Carolina tied it in somewhat dramatic fashion.
It was a
gun.
Fun game at the end, yeah.
Yeah, Drake May scrambles around. He connects with Antoine Green for a four-yard touchdown as time expires. Sends it to overtime, but NC State then gets a field goal. NC State, wins when North Carolina should have gotten a field goal, but their kicker shanked it, which would have tied it. So NC State goes to 8-4. Nice win for them. Sort of a underwhelming campaign for NC State on a couple different fronts, but the fact that they held it together, finished 8-4, I thought was a really nice campaign. Defensively, still pretty solid throughout the year. And in this one, held North Carolina to 5 of 20 on third downs. Very much a bend but don't break offense for them in this game here as they
bend,
win.
But how do you even do that? A bend but don't break offense. Like, look, not that good, but do good enough. Show them just enough. The Tim Beck way. Look forward to that TED Talk. North Carolina State, NC State. And this was their fourth string quarterback? Ryan Finley's little brother, if memory serves?
Ben Finley,
Ben Finley made plays. Defense has been tasked with holding up the entirety of the NC State tent all year long. And you finish the year beating North Carolina in dramatic fashion. The glory boys of UNC and Drake May, the next big thing. I wouldn't go as far as saying a successful season, but it's a feel-good Thanksgiving weekend if you're a... a Wolfpack fan.
A bend but don't break defense, excuse me.
No, hold on. Let's go back to the bend but don't break
offense.
Just
click now what we're talking about.
Take some sacks, sail some balls onto the sideline, sure. Make some super questionable third and fourth calls, of course, but do just enough in overtime to win with the field goal.
Yeah. We had an NC State flag planting at midfield.
I love a good flag planting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Devin Carter and some teammates for NC State planted the flag.
Mm-hmm.
At midfield. All right. Shall we close things out with the SEC?
Please.
Mississippi State wins the Egg Bowl 24-22. Mizzou gets bowl eligible. I told you they wanted this one. They win 29-27 over Arkansas to get to 6-6.
Yeah.
Kentucky wins 26-13 over Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
And Tennessee blanks Vanderbilt by a 56-0 score. Maybe Hendon Hooker was holding this team back.
Obviously, that's what it must
maybe
have been.
Maybe that's what it was here.
Thoughts on the SEC. Vandy, still a nice season, even though you finished it losing 56-0. And Joe Milton, I don't think did much because they could just run straight at
it. Ran straight
Vandy,
at
right? Yeah. With it was Jabari Small didn't do much, but oh no, he did do much. I'm totally misreading this box score because I did not watch this game at all. Quickly back to Florida State. Anthony Richardson looked incredible, by the way, in that first half. And did he get his face mask yank on the last play of the game and not have it not be called? But either way, really good from Florida State and disappointing way to finish out the year for the Gators in the SEC. And Florida State, you know, like 7 plays away from your 10-2, 11-1 type season. So there's that. Mizzou winning the game that they win. There is something about Mizzou and Brady Cook's November, by the way, which has quietly been very, very good, both on the ground and through the air. This term is used, I think, in like real estate. I think Mizzou has good bones, good guts, right? That like you don't fully see the finished product, but the walls are sturdy. The floorboards aren't warped or anything like that. I think Mizzou's got good guts, good bones moving forward. And so I'm sort of in on Mizzou and continued improvement.
The defense stepped up in this one as it has all year, and they got some big stops.
Yeah.
I think they got 7 sacks in this game. The fact that they started getting that production from Brady Cook was, I think,
he's
the
good.
Turning point. That was the turning point. He looked solid. He had over 300 total yards in this game. And they're never short on motivation with Eli Drinkwitz. He always has that team up to play. And it was interesting because Arkansas also kind of is in that lane, too. I mean, they always are up for some of their bigger games. Yeah. But I just got the sense that they were out of gas and that Mizzou wanted it more.
Mizzou's defense got stronger in the second half. You're right. You're absolutely right. Otherwise, in the SEC, you mentioned the Egg Bowl. Some weird coaching from Lane Kiffin with a really big spotlight on him, given all the Auburn rumors from earlier on in the week. I thought Will Rogers made a number of really good individual plays and finding guys deep. And just when we talked about Michigan, Ohio State, where it's like, man, there was a lot that like just seemed hard for Ohio State. And that's never something that's not a metric I can quantify, like who has it, who seems to be doing what they want to do easier. Mississippi seemed to do what they wanted to do in easier fashion. Like, even when Ole Miss would convert a 3rd and 6, it was with a Mississippi State player draped all over a receiver. Like, everything took so much more effort for Ole Miss in this one than it did for Mississippi State. So, you know, it's arguably the most vicious back and forth rivalry in the sport, and came down to the end. It was weird. It was odd. Decisions were made that were weird and odd. But hey, good for State for getting back in the win column in this one.
Yeah. You also mentioned the Auburn Lane Kiffin stuff. Lane Kiffin came out and denied it, essentially, that
a report. Yeah.
Yeah. That there were reports he could be going to Auburn. He said, unless something significantly changes, he won't be the guy. That is of note. It does kind of color this opening here in a little bit of a different way. It does sound as if Hugh Freeze might be the guy that that Auburn has targeted.
It's been floated, yeah.
Has targeted for its opening. Hugh Freeze, we've heard comments from Hugh Freeze now for the last 2 years. Hugh Freeze is open for business. If there's another job that's out there. Dude,
any topic, Hugh Freeze is open for business.
I mean,
yeah.
he is ready, willing, and able to take a big job. So Hugh Freeze.
Was that intentional? Was that intentional?
I don't know anything about that.
Okay. Okay. Speaking of Hugh Freeze, full on competitive for a quarter against New Mexico State.
May have already been on the bus to Auburn.
Just demolished 49-14. Congrats, Liberty. I don't know about any other SEC thoughts, Strayce. The Iron Bowl. I mean, it's weird to sort of gloss over the Iron Bowl, but Auburn scores right away, and then it's just all Alabama all the time. Yep. Bryce Young looks like Bryce Young. They seem to be improving in a number of places, but are they when it's Auburn? I don't know. But they looked like what a very good team should look like against a reeling Auburn team. So good for Bama to finish the regular season
in
style.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of SEC adjacent because a lot of these games are between conferences, right? Just the way Florida State's playing an SEC team.
Right.
Kentucky was playing an ACC team in Louisville. And so I have Louisville listed under the SEC wing of my notes here. And I'm curious to see what happens at Louisville. Could this be the end of the Satterfield era?
It's tough. I suppose it could be, but dealing with the quarterback injury issues that they dealt with this year. But it's not like Kentucky's offense was all that crazy good this year. But Kentucky developed guys on offense this year, even when the full picture was not always clear. And defensively, they did a very good job, as they tend to do. But winning a rivalry game at home by double digits is nothing to take lightly. So good for Kentucky, I assume. I mean, obviously, Will Levis has played his last regular season game for the Wildcats. I assume there will be some adjustments and tweaks on offense moving forward for the Cats.
All right. Elsewhere, the other big game that transpired this weekend, at least between top 25 teams, Tulane knocks off Cincinnati. Tulane gets to 10-2. They win 27-24, perhaps Luke Fickell's final game in Cincinnati, per reports that surfaced just during the recording of the show.
Well, they're still in the championship game, are they not? Oh, no, Tulane's playing UCF, excuse me.
Tulane's got UCF, right.
That's right. A rematch. Tulane loses that game. Ooh, that's interesting. Okay.
That is where things stood, Dan. Any other action, any other notables that you want to get here into the public record?
Can I finally get to Undercuffler in the Akron Zips? No? Yes?
We just love this team.
Yeah.
Junior. Undercuffler Junior.
Excuse me. Yes. That's Jeff is my father. I believe it's Ohio-Toledo in the MAC championship game. Ohio cleanly wins, but Curtis Rourke out for the year, as we know. But that's behind a big second quarter for Ohio. That was Tuesday night of Thanksgiving week MACtion. Miami of Ohio gets bowl eligible with a win over Ball State. Boise State, you know, they're playing Fresno State this coming week in the Mountain West championship. They finish off, you know, if you watch the first couple weeks of Boise State football, that they finished undefeated in the Mountain West. Found a good quarterback to turn to, with Hank Bachmeyer not being the answer this year. They take down a Utah State team, the defending Mountain West champ, who they themselves had a down year, but still finished bowl eligible at 6-6. Eastern Michigan, cannot stress this enough, how bad Eastern Michigan was for so long, that they're 8-4 this year and going to a bowl game. Another successful year for them. Western Michigan does beat Toledo, but Toledo's still going to the championship game via tiebreaker. Colorado State gets a win, which didn't happen all that often for the Rams this year. They finished the year 3-9. Fresno State, who we mentioned, they blank Wyoming, absolutely shut them down in Fresno. Wyoming obviously could not get a single thing going on offense. Elsewhere, UCF obviously playing for the American Championship, a fun back and forth game, crazy numbers coming out of there. The war on I-4 against South Florida, who finishes 1-11 and winless in the American Army. 5-6, obviously they still have Navy left. They take down UMass, which they should have done. We mentioned New Mexico State and Liberty. Coastal Carolina without, it's just a bummer, without Grayson McCall.
Yeah.
They get destroyed by JMU, who moves to 8-3. Still haven't seen anything on the bowl thing. Maybe something's happening there. South Alabama finishes 10-2 with a win over ODU. Ricky Ronnie and the Monarchs of ODU. Marshall, first year in the Sun Belt, they finish 8-4 with their win over Georgia State. WKU, Western Kentucky, the Toppers, in overtime, beat FAU, who then promptly fires Willie Taggart after the game as head coach. They relieve him of his duties. Elsewhere, I mentioned the EJ Warner thing in a shootout against ECU. Again, 527 and 5 touchdowns in a losing effort. Not ideal. Elsewhere, San Jose State moves 7-4. They take down Hawaii. SMU gets a close win over Memphis and finishes the season 7-5 in the first year at head coach for Rhett Lashley. Troy, a very quiet 10-2. They demolish Arkansas State on the road, 48-19. UAB is bowl eligible at 6-6, win over Louisiana Tech by 10. UTSA, another quiet 10-2 year. Jeff Traylor's gonna get a job.
Stop stealing my thunder on the 10-2 teams, Dan. I got a whole montage plan.
Sorry. I won't mention records.
Thank you.
Georgia Southern and Clay Helton get bowl eligible at 6-6. App State finishes they themselves 6-6, 51-48.
Wow.
I don't know in how many overtimes.
Man, what a ride. See, that's multiple? The thing. That's the thing about college football.
Yeah.
App State finished 6-6. I would take that 6-6 year. That was a hell of a roller coaster, at least in the very beginning for App State.
Right.
I'll take that. Continue.
Okay. That was a double overtime game, I believe. Chase Bryce and Kyle Van Trees.
Yeah.
The traveled to. Otherwise, I did see Fordham, man. I did see Fordham. They go down, right? To New Hampshire, the FCS playoffs. Anything else of note to you, Ty?
Yeah, Dan. Tulane, Clemson, Penn State, UTSA, Washington, Tennessee, Alabama, Troy, and South Alabama finish the year 10-2. Great campaign for all of those schools, Dan.
Yeah. Tulsa, nice win over Houston. I didn't mention that. Air Force, nice win over San Diego State as they get to 9-3. Somebody should keep hiring Air Force's assistant coaches because it appears Troy Calhoun does a really good job hiring defensive coaches. That's all.
Daniel, we got a just wonderful array of reverbs.
I'm ready.
This week. As you know, we typically do reverbs only through week 13 because just have fewer teams playing in week 14. It makes sense. So this is in effect the final week of reverbs. Give a shout out to our guy Shay, who has done a masterful job this year mixing these together, trying to tap into that just deep-seated passion that makes college football so special. So this is a little bit longer, but nonetheless, I think very much worth it. Have a listen. Week 13 reverbs.
My son was born with about 7 minutes left in the first half of last year's version of the Michigan-Ohio State game. I was nervous before this year's game, but I am proud to say that my son does not know a world in which Michigan has lost to Ohio State. When we say we want to make a better world for our children, this is what we mean.
Dan, Ty, this is Doug from Albuquerque.
This is Sam from Salem, Oregon.
This is Ray calling from... I was down by 2 scores in the fourth quarter. They'd better hope Nebraska gets the ball twice.
You know, it's been 9 years since my Nebraska Cornhuskers have beaten Iowa. And in that time, I've graduated college, gotten married, and had 2 kids. So, thank you, Ty, for locking up Iowa.
Go Big Red, baby!
Does it still just mean more to be in the SEC? Or is that something we only say when the SEC team wins?
Go Noles!
whether you're Mississippi State on Thursday, Nebraska on Friday, or South Carolina today, it's always proved. When it comes to a rival game, you throw the records out.
We could talk about how DJU didn't look right, that how staff changes may be necessary at Clemson. But you know what we don't talk about? Clemson in the playoffs. You're welcome, America. Go Cox.
I think on behalf of a lot of longtime Verballers, I'm just happy the phrase Clemsoning might be back.
Georgia, what were you doing playing with your food when it was in the crock pot?
Okay. I'm going to try to be a good sport here. Mike Elko deserves credit for a great year. Now I'm going to be a bad sport. He only learned it from when he worked for Dave Clawson.
I think I can speak for Boilermakers everywhere when I say, it's sure great that Purdue's going to the Big Ten Championship game next week, but did you guys see that Hoops went over Gonzaga Friday night?
Is there such a thing as a look-ahead spot in a conference championship game? Asking for a momentarily happy Big Ten Division West champion. Boiler up.
The ugliest trophy in sports is coming home, and Penn State's going back to a New Year's Six Bowl. We are!
Since we don't need that $85 million for Jimbo anymore, I guess we could just give it as a going-away gift to Nate Shane. Thanks and giggle.
Michigan is going to win in Columbus for the first time since my junior year of high school. And I'm 39.
I knew from the second you pegged Ohio State as the national champion, it was a double reverse jinx. Congratulations, I.
Sad Buckeye fan here. That game got uglier and uglier. Starting to wonder if we would have put 100 on them as a new turning point in the rivalry.
To be fair, Ryan Day never said how many games it would take him to hang 100 on Michigan.
Ryan Day has lost 2 Big Ten games in 4 years. Is Ryan Day on the hot seat?
I stand in an empty horseshoe after the Michigan Wolverines just won 2 years in a row, even worse than last year. We're going back to the chip. Let's go blue. Go blue, go blue, go blue.
Last year, I called running through the snow and hit the landing when Michigan beat Ohio State. And now I'm running through a 50-degree day in the field because Michigan beat Ohio State again. Put me on. This is Joshua Mifflin.
So here's the thing. I don't know much about soccer or football or football, as it is called in different areas of the world. I am but a humble college football fan who just cares about her country not being embarrassed every 4 years. What I do know, I know grit. I know scrappiness.
There you go. There are your week 13 reverbs, Dan.
Yeah, baby.
Appreciate everybody dialing in. Yeah, I got a little soccer talk there. It kind of coincided on Friday. Yeah, with the World Cup as well. But thank you again to our guy Shay for doing a marvelous job.
The best.
Putting those together. Truly the best source of passion all throughout the college football universe. The reverbs. Must listen every week. Before we go any further, before we put a bow on this thing, Dan. We got this week in week 13.
Should we name some dudes? Caleb Williams, Michael Wiley, Trey Palmer for Nebraska, getting loose in the Iowa secondary. How about J.J. McCarthy and Mike Sanders still making that big play that we talked about? Devin Achain, Riley Leonard, Jordan Travis, E.J. Warner. How about that? Jared Wayne, Michael Penix, and Jeff Undercuffler Jr.
Jr.
Jeff is my father.
Jeffrey is my father. Please call me Jeffy. great weekend. Great weekend of games. Cannot wait for conference championship weekend. Can't wait for the Atlanta Live show. SolidVerbalLive.com. Terminal West in Atlanta, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. Cannot wait to meet and greet and have fun together. It's going to be a special show. SolidVerbalLive.com. Just a handful of tickets left. Hurry up.
Hurry up. Come on out again. SolidVerbalLive.com. And if you have yet to listen, go to extranuggets.show. Ooh. Or just search for Extra Nuggets on your podcasting app of choice. It's a new show. Dan Rubenstein with a friend, Adam Amin. They go through old Jeopardy categories. They give you context on the answers. It's fun. It's easily digestible all throughout the holiday season. We got rave reviews here through the first few days of releasing Extra Nuggets last Tuesday. And for those of you that got in on the action in time, we will announce the winner of the PS5 on the November 29th episode that drops on Tuesday, Dan. A lot of excitement in the Extra Nuggets universe.
Cannot wait.
Folks, we made it. We made it through the regular season. We hope you'll be with us here through the offseason as well. We've got conference championship games a week from now. We're going to preview those as the week goes on. We've got coaching changes. No doubt we have not heard the last of those. And certainly as we push into college football bowl season, we will have an exclusive bowl pool, a confidence pool, as we always do here on the show for our folks at verballers.com. If you've yet to sign up, we'd love to have you aboard.
Ooh, gotta get there. Gotta get there.
If you want to play in that pool, more to come on that in just a little bit. For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, hope you enjoyed the 2022 college football regular season, but there's much more to come. Stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.